everybody. It is Robert Saget. It's Bob Saget's here for you. It's one sentence, you know. There's no colon or anything. It's Bob Saget's here for you. That's the name that we came up with, or I came up with. And then someone said, okay. Anyway, this is an episode that has a person that many of you are familiar with, Andrew Yang. Andrew Yang is my guest today. And I like Andrew Yang. From the moment he took that stage, I became familiar with him in 2018, which I'm sure many of you did, with the whole presidential election procedure, and also his run for mayor of New York. And he is a fascinating person and a very direct and heartfelt person and incredibly smart. And he wrote this book. It's called Forward Notes on the Future of Our Democracy. There it is on an iPad. Some people would have it on a tablet. I don't know. Tablet sounds cool. You have two of them and you have the future Ten Commandments. He is he's just a very well-spoken, very direct person. And he's in the political world, right? So how can that be? How can you trust someone that's a politician? I like this man. So he is my guest today. And we're going to talk to him in just a second. I just have a little bit of business to take care of. You want to buy some pants? I got a trunk full of pants. You need steaks? Oh, actually, probably they're my sponsors. I don't know. But okay, you can rate, review, subscribe this podcast to this podcast. It is available on all platforms. The loading dock, the back of the ship. Again, the trunk is full of pants. When I was a kid, my dad took me to a parking lot because we didn't have a lot of money. And we bought pants, slacks, that fit me out of a man's trunk. That's what I'm willing to sell here. That's going to be my new sponsor, just a guy selling pants out of his trunk. All right, well, that digression was very successful. The other thing you can do here is download this podcast. And you do want to make comments. We do look at them, and we do listen to them if they're kind. If they're not kind, I take them, I try to learn from stuff. I love doing this podcast. I cannot see myself not doing it. It's become part of my life. It is a conversation. You know, it's interesting. It's like you have a conversation with somebody, but you are forced to have one because you have a podcast. But it keeps me connected to the world. And just to have a conversation with someone, especially now, a lot of times now you'll go out to dinner with someone. If you drink, you would have drinks. You might talk about current events. You might talk about what's upsetting you. You might talk about a show you're binging on. When you, and so many hundreds of thousands of you have podcasts. So when you have a podcast, you get to talk to people, and they can be the most interesting people, or they can be a person that might not be interesting, but it just is so healthy to have a conversation and keep an open dialogue in your life and not, or be a quiet person and keep to yourself and listen to podcasts. I bet there's a lot of you out there that do that. I'm just wishing everybody well, you know. I'm just hoping for positive energy for all of us because things are looking a bit dismal right now in this wonderful United States of America that I love so much. I love this country. It's my country. I'm from here. It says it on my mail. And so Andrew Yang cares about this country, and we're going to have him as a guest right now. You can, of course, you can download it. You can go to the YouTube page, youtube.com/Bob Saget. Also, he is out constantly on a book tour right now for this wonderful book. Really is a good book. So check it out if you like books. And also, I'm on tour. If you, I'm not promoting a book. I am doing brand new stand-up. 90 minutes of all new material that I will be doing a special out of. And every date that I have is a consequential moment in my life. I take it so seriously and I love it so much. Everywhere I'm performing, this is no bullshit. I just love my stand-up like I haven't in decades. So you can go to bobsaget.com and find out where I'm touring. I'm adding dates constantly. I'm just adding some dates at, I don't know, in Florida, at a Hard Rock, different places, in Florida. But I will be performing. I'm doing it in a weird way. I'm not like going, here's my tour. I do that sometimes. Theater tour. You know, everybody's trying to do, you know, what they're doing. And there's some great comedians out right now. And in 2022, everybody's going to be doing comedy. You're going to be seeing comedy everywhere. You can only take so many comedians per month, right? Maybe three to get some good heartfelt laughs. Whatever you can do, I will be out there. So keep looking. I'll be coming up to Canada in 2022. Thank goodness, finally going to get that done after what we've all been through these past couple of years. So I'm at bobsaget.com. And now you want to go to andrewyang.com because we have a very special guest. I really like this guy. And he's the kind of guy I would love being friends with. And, you know, once you do a podcast, you start an acquaintance. And next thing you know, you're taking pictures together at some late night spot. Here comes a very special guest who loves the United States and his family. And has a lot of love in him, which makes me have that for him. Here's Andrew Yang. How are you? You must be exhausted. I see you online, and I know that you're busy all the time.
Well, thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. You know what I did the other night? I saw you on the big screen on the Dave Chappelle documentary, and it made me so happy. That movie made me so happy, but seeing you also made me happy.
That's really sweet, because somebody told me I got a big laugh in it, and I went, well, that's a huge compliment, because it's Dave Chappelle and everybody.
Have you seen it yet?
I have. I was at the radio. Dave opened, as he opens places, Radio City Music Hall, so I was at the premiere of that.
Yeah, I missed that because I was running for mayor. I remember that well.
You were a little busy.
Like, he was in town, and he was like, hey, come by, see the premiere. And I was like, oh, fuck, man, I can't make that shit.
Right.
We're in the dark. But now, much more flexible in my schedule. And so my wife and I went to the garden and watched it. Saw your big laugh-getting moment. You know, I made a brief cameo myself, which warmed my heart.
Yes, you did. He loves you.
Yeah, I love him too, and there's a chance he and I may be working together on something that might help, which, Bob, if that happens, we'll definitely try and rope you in.
I love to be roped, because we can't even say that anymore. I get canceled just for saying I love to be roped.
Well, I mean, in that context, you really should not be, but that, no. That is, I'll tell you though, Bob, that is the point of what Dave and I may be working on, which is... That people should be able to say shit and not have that voice in their head be like, oh shit, like, you know,
yeah.
Like, was that, you know, cancellation material? And obviously, Dave has been through a version of that recently.
Yeah, and a bunch of people have. And Dave is, what's so interesting, you know that his heart is nothing but full of love.
Seriously, I mean, shit, anyone who's been around that guy for 5 seconds knows that.
Yeah, and you have this unusual quality that I was drawn to. I reached out to you just like a biatch on, can't say that, canceled, on a direct message on Twitter, just telling you that I was a fan of yours, and then you offered to send me your book, and I just want to say that they didn't send it. So this is really why I wanted to do a podcast with you, just about that.
That my publishers suck.
No, but here I must show this book because I read this thing, and here it is in the online version. Is it backwards or forwards? Is it Hebraic or?
It is forward. It's not Chinese or Hebrew style.
I know. Hebrew style is. Can you say Gangnam? Can you say anything anymore? Gangnams? Can I? Am I allowed? I don't. I'm doing stand up. I'm on tour. But let me, the hell with me. All I was going to say was, I say I canceled, not canceled, throughout my work. But this book is in such plain speak that I've been dying to have from any politician. I don't want to call you a politician.
I appreciate that, Bob.
Humanitarian, but it's Notes on the Future of Our Democracy. It is, the War on Normal People is a New York Times bestseller, of course. And a lot of people across the country go, oh, New York Times. Oh, I'll definitely want to read that.
The way that goes.
It's so, what are you, how can you do this? How do we, and you get asked this a lot. I've watched all the interviews with you. I've listened, you know, from everything.
Well, thank you, Bob.
well, I really admire you for being a person and caring about this country. So,
yeah, we're in bad shape. I don't know if people have noticed. It's not going so well. I mean, that's what prompted me to get into this arena in the first place. And the deeper in I go, the more you're like, oh God, like, you know, like this. It's in many ways this giant fable of like people versus the machine. But the machine in this case is the systems, the duopoly, like an increasingly punishing media environment, an increasingly punishing economic environment. And there was a panelist, this was years ago, but it really stuck with me. She was on stage and she just said, does anyone get that sense that we all kind of know we're going places we don't want to go, but no one can do anything about it?
Yeah.
And that sentiment really stuck with me because I was like, oh shit, like she just hit the nail on the head. Like, that's the way we all feel. And so that's what's been animating me ever since I decided to stick my head into the public sphere. And, you know, that started in 2017 when I filed the papers to run for president, which obviously no one gave a shit about.
That's not true, though. Your self-effacing attitude is people did give a shit, and people took notice of the people that felt like human beings out of that. And there were a couple. And you really came... It really came through. I mean, that's, look where you're here. I mean, to be able to come up with a forward party.
I'm so grateful, Bob. But like, but you know, when I filed the papers, it's, you know, affirmative fact that no one cared about, you know, Andrew Yang running for president at that point because I was an anonymous person. And then when I poked my head out in earnest in early 2018, when the New York Times article came out, like some very, very small number of people took notice and then decided to start caring. It sounds like you noticed me during 2018, which I appreciate a great deal.
Yeah. And I only so looked at you above the neck. It was eye contact only.
Good, nothing. Below the navel, it's like, you know, horror show. No. Well,
send pictures. Send pictures or it didn't happen.
So.
Wait a minute. Can we use that quote? Ever since the accident. It's a horror show down below the navel.
Yeah. You know, that was the joke I was trying to tell. So, so since 2018, I've been a public figure, and my wife and I marvel at the fact that, you know, I've made a dent in the last 3.5 years, but the deeper in you go, the more you're like, okay, what's the problem? This is the problem. Okay, let me try and solve that. Like, what's the problem? This is the problem. I've got a number of things working right now that I'm very, very proud of. And I still feel pretty pessimistic about like the trajectory of the country. You know what I mean? It's like that's, but the thing that excites me is that there are a lot of people who are waking up every day to be like, okay, I don't feel very good about the future of the country. So what the fuck are we going to do? And then, you know, like sometimes they start digging and are like, oh, what the hell's Yang working on? Forward party? Like, it's interesting. Let me look into that. Like, why is he doing that? And so that there's like a budding rebellion, shall we say. It feels good. So that part feels good. But, you know, we've got a lot of work ahead of us. That's for sure.
Well, they compare you to who else can people think of that made a dent, and Ross Perot's name comes up. And, you know, that was all I remember from that whole campaign was Dana Carvey's impression of Ross
Perot. Sucking sound? Yeah, the SNL impressions really do tend to stick in your head.
But I think you're in safe territory. I mean, you know, Byron Wong is the most danger you I think you're safe. I think you're beloved. You really are. I mean, there's something about who you are. And it comes through in this book. I read this book and I read about how what your wife went through with you on this and your affection for each other. And you really can't, people think people can fake that, but you can't. Did you meet her on Tinder? How did that happen?
Yeah, it was, I met her while we were out about in New York City. I was trying to find a joke.
I know. I wanted to hear it. I was, people wouldn't take it out of context. I wouldn't do that.
So she and I met out and about in New York City. We actually met on the campus of our shared alma mater after the fact. We both graduated. We both went to Columbia at different times, and then we met on campus, and then we reconnected a few months later in New York City. And since then, I've been really almost attached to the hip. It's been kind of, well, I mean, when I was running for president, then I was detached at the hip for for weeks on end. So I owe her so much, but we've had a great partnership almost since the day we met.
I have to ask, because all relationships get strained by different people's jobs, and everybody, all of your friends, did people say to you, why, Andrew, are you doing this after what you'd been through already to now come back? It's a two-part question, because where do you get that energy to then now push the biggest boulder of all up a hill, which would be Forward Party and what you want to do?
So the journeys have had their own kind of rhythms. And I will say, so Bob Saget's on tour right now. Running for office and being a touring comedian do have some eerie parallels. I really vouch for that. It's like you show up, it's a group of people, they expect you to invigorate them or entertain them or inspire them somehow. You start out in small venues. I mean, I mean, shit, dude, like, I have no idea how your, like, comedy career started. So I imagine there were small venues in the distant past.
I was in a ditch. I was the inside of a cannon. That's where I slept.
So you're in there doing your thing. In my case, it's like a New Hampshire coffee shop or an Iowa Union Hall or wherever it is. And then you hit the message over and over again, and you hope that people liked it. You hope that people tell their friends. You hope that when you come back to town, there's a slightly bigger crowd. So in my case, that was the story between 2018 and 2020. Then COVID hit, and I got to remind my kids of what daddy looked like and whatnot. Like, I was home a lot. I was just Zooming all the fucking time, like everyone was. And, you know, I was working pretty hard. Like, I was Zooming, gosh, you know, like 8-10 hours a day most days. But still, like, compared to running around, it's like you Zoom and then you go home and have, you know, you go downstairs and have dinner with your kids, or you, like, you know, like, watch TV with your wife or whatnot, because we're all stuck. So there was like a bit of a respite baked in there, you know, in terms of an energy level. Then I went to Georgia, and that was awesome and fun. Really fun. I mean, Georgia, I love you. Like, that was the bomb. And that state, we like, I mean, we were there to work hard, but mm-hmm. we ended up having such a blast. And then this winter I ran for mayor, and that was a freaking brutal grind because New York City was still closed for COVID when I first started running. Then I got COVID, which, by the way, sucked. Like, you know, like I managed to get COVID literally like 6 weeks before the vaccine was available. It was one of those things where it's like I'm campaigning.
Right.
And I was like, get COVID. And then, oh, by the way, I'm running for mayor. So it's like, well, gotta be Superman and be like, you know, this is no big deal. So I was like, you know, doing Zooms while totally incoherent.
But apparently babies can't get it. So that would be great. You could still kiss the babies.
Yeah, they still, like, I was on my sick bed and they were like bringing in babies for me to kiss. So then after the mayoral ended, I was very, very tired because that was a very difficult campaign, but had a bit of time in the summer to recharge and spend time with the family. And you can see a pattern here, right? It's like there's like a work your ass off and then come home and reconnect and recharge. And in my case, too, I had this book coming out that I was very, very proud of. So I was like, well, time to fucking, you know, get on the horse and make sure that this movement has its just due in terms of my own energy and excitement. So I hit the road on this book tour, and we're doing some more touring in a little while. I've got some dates in Dallas and Houston coming up. See, don't I sound like a fucking comedian? Isn't that great?
You do, and you drop the F-bombs. I'm not going to interrupt you long, but I do want to ask you, it is a choice to reach the people. And to reach the younger people always go to me, why did you curse, Bob? And I said, because more fucking people will listen. And then a 20-year-old's eyes and ears perk up. The question is, do you get concerned ever, or have you ever been, do you have a campaign manager that goes, hey, try to watch it with the language? Because I would find it refreshing as long as, you know, a five-year-old's not watching the news at, you know, during a press conference, you know, we're going to get this fucking country back on track.
I mean, shit, at this point, it would be helpful to hear someone say that. But
actually, I agree.
But Bob, it's so funny you ask, because, you know, from your perspective, you're like Mr. America's funniest home videos, and everyone thinks of you as like the cleanest cut dude in the world, and then you like start saying fucking and whatnot, and at least the first time people are like, oh, I didn't know Bob Saget, you know,
has vocabulary.
I don't know if that's the kind of reaction you get.
Oh yeah,
I'd imagine, because you have this kind of wholesome persona. So in my case, when I was running for president, it was such a battle against oblivion where, you know, at any moment you could be like, people just turn the lights out. And I had a different type of vibe at rallies than I did in the media interview. I wasn't dropping F-bombs when, you know, ABC like news is interviewing. Actually, maybe I did. Who the hell can remember? But at rallies, you'd be dropping F-bombs. And then the other category of media was podcasts or YouTube. And so my brain segmented things into traditional media where I should try and be straight-laced and serious. And I, you know, I was on CNN for a while, so I was, you know, like a traditional media figure where you're not, you know, like profane all the time.
Right.
But then whenever it was a podcast or YouTube, I said, fuck it, you know, I can say whatever. So that's at least the way my brain worked on the presidential. And now that I'm not a current candidate, certainly I feel more unfettered, where I've been saying shit that I probably would have thought twice about if I were like a current candidate. And there were oppo clips of me trying to paint me as unserious that just had me like dropping F-bombs over and over again. Like people just like splice that shit together and be like, this is the guy, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, like in some ways, like if I was a traditional politician, people would be like, okay, this is a tactical decision, blah, blah, blah. I will say, Bob, that one of the things that's ruining America is that every major political figure has a team of paid consultants around them. And then that team of paid consultants are trying to turn them into a robot. Mm-hmm. And I just had a conversation with, by the way, like another non-traditional candidate who's entering this realm. Like, hey, FYI, the consultants are going to try and sand down any edges because they have a much higher interest in you losing like a professional than in you having a chance to win. Because if you lose like a professional, then they just tick your name on their record, cash the check, and then move on to the next gig. Whereas if you do something that can make them look bad, then they don't like it. So anytime you say something out of turn as a political figure, then like there's someone in your ear being like, okay, don't do that. And they have pretty good rationales too. They'll be like, you're alienating grandma, you're alienating like the 35% of voters who really get offended by that stuff, like et cetera, et cetera. And you're hearing it be like, oh, okay, I get it. But over time, you do realize that there are multiple motivations driving them. And it's not all like they want grandma to vote for you. It's like they want you to, like, you know, keep their record clean.
I mean, it's so vast, the problems that we have. And I know people, and you know people that are older that say to me all the time, I never thought in my lifetime I would see this. And my dad went through the Great Depression. He's no longer with us, but I know what he would say. I have a 99-year-old friend who's a brilliant man, and he goes, I never thought I would see the country. And you've said this, as much in trouble as the Civil War atmosphere. So
yeah, it's bad.
It's bad. So we are headed toward, will a third party succeed? That is always the, because right now you, for me, would be it'd be so refreshing to have someone that feels like a friend someone that has incredible knowledge. I mean, if anyone looks up your intelligence score, I get 200 points for signing my name on the SAT, and you're a lawyer and went to Columbia, and you're incredibly bright and humble. So how can we find a person like that that America would vote for, being that everything's whacked?
Oh, Bob, I'm going to fast forward to what most people are thinking right now, which is Trump coming back in 24.
Right.
I think that's the elephant in the room.
Are you saying he resembles? No, go ahead. Sorry.
You know, I actually just last night I was riding in the car with my wife, and I don't know what I was looking up, but I randomly saw this clip of myself talking trash about Trump. Which was just seeing it. It was like one day in Iowa, I just started like waxing. But it was like, you know, what could Trump beat me at? Being a slob? Like, it was like, for whatever reason, I was like,
a hamburger, you know, eating contest.
Yeah, I was like, is it a contest where there are like these balloons from up, and the goal is to try and like stay on the ground? Because if that's the case, he could be like, I just had like random like things. It's like, what the hell could that guy beat me at? So. He's coming in 24, almost certainly, in my view. He's the prohibitive favorite in the Republican Party, and he'd be the favorite against Joe Biden if the election were held today, hands down. I mean, some polling numbers just came out that show him with leads between 3 and 12 points in 5 swing states that Biden won in 2020, being Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio, Pennsylvania. And in some of those states, Trump has a 10-point lead, apparently. And that's, you know, I mean, that's just reality. Like, the Biden administration's not off to a roaring start, and people are pissed off. I mean, like, the big theme that I've been trying to channel positively is that Americans are fucking sick and tired of a lot of things out of, like, their quote-unquote leaders, and they've been casting about for a change. And so Trump has converted the Republican Party out of that impulse. And by the way, you know, I think Trump is the wrong human being. But you saw a similar impulse on the other side with Bernie. There were a lot of people that liked both Bernie and Trump. And in Bernie's case, the DNC then sandbagged him. And there's like this corporate wing of the Democratic Party that's like, no, that's not right. That's not right. Like, you know, we got to go this direction. You could even see it, maybe traces of it, in Obama's beating Hillary Clinton, you know, when he was coming up. Like, people have been casting about for a change agent that they could take to Washington because they just don't think shit is working at all. Now, that is working against the Democrats right now because people are like, oh, like, tired of Trump. Like, that, you know, this guy is not the right president for COVID and a bunch of other things. And so even with that as the backdrop, Joe Biden ekes out a victory in 2020. If you look at it, he wins the popular vote by, you know, maybe 7 million, but he wins the Electoral College by the equivalent of 42,000 votes in 3 swing states. I mean, it was razor thin. Now, when Trump decides to run again and beats Chris Christie and Mike Pence and Pompeo and, you know, this group of people he'll be running against probably, then he's going to come in as the heavy favorite. The Democrats, in all likelihood, run either Joe or Kamala, and I can get into, you know, those two figures and their, you know, what I think is going on. But there are the two most likely outcomes are that Trump wins outright, or that it's close and then Trump says he wins. And in either of those cases, I think you see widespread protests and violence on the streets of the country. And I want you all just to imagine, let's say Trump wins straight up, fair and square. Wins Michigan, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and it's like, Trump is back, 24. Are there protests in New York, where I am, and in blue cities around the country if Trump wins re-election, fair and square? Hell yes, like, in my opinion. Like, the people will be so inflamed, yes, because they'll be like, I can't believe that the country elected this, you know, racist guy again. I mean, like, what the hell is going on? Like there would be this massive surge of civil unrest and then some. If Trump loses narrowly and says he won, will there be widespread civil unrest? Yes, because like the Trumpers will, like, you're going to see it from one side or the other in all likelihood in 3 short years. So when you think about the recipe for Civil War 2.0, like your 99-year-old friend or like you and I are suggesting, it's not hypothetical anymore. I mean, like, this stuff is with us. And the numbers bear it out, where 42% of both Democrats and Republicans view the other side as evil or their mortal enemies. Like, in that kind of environment, that, you can that, see it getting there.
And how can we be that de-evolved? How have we turned into a UFC match? That's what we are. It literally, and Trump was really, is really good at it. He's very, he knows how to play the media. It could be a cartoon, it could be whatever, but there are people that look at him as a godlike figure, which I just, I can't understand it. I'm out there on the road. I'm in front of audiences. Like you were saying, we have similar somethings. I don't have your IQ, but I do have people that are completely Republican, good God-fearing Christians that I enjoy entertaining. I enjoy making them happy. I don't want to talk about him negatively. And I have other people that are, you know, full of hate and a lot of woke audiences that I also love making happy. I don't understand why people can't come back. I mean, I do understand human nature is fucked right now, but to be able to bring people together, how could you, the only way to do it is with your idea of a third party, I would assume, or a person. It's really about you.
Thanks for saying so, Bob. I think it's about us, and I love the experience that you have as someone who brings people together who have different backgrounds and beliefs, just to entertain them and have a great night where they can forget about the world.
It's a lot of talk about my penis, but that does bring people together. It's the first time it ever did something good.
Bob's penis has brought many, many a crowd together.
Yes. It's the axis of the earth.
Galileo had a theory about the Earth's rotation. What you do, what I'm trying to do, what Dave does for sure. I mean, shit, if you saw this group in the garden.
Yeah, and I'm friends with all of them. I was in Yellow Springs. You were in Yellow Springs, right?
Yeah, I was. What a time. I mean, what a haven.
Mm-hmm.
The key right now, and this is one of the big lessons I have with the Forward Party, Bob, is that when you get Americans together, and you know this, 95 times out of 100, people are pretty good. People are kind, open. I mean, I'm an Asian dude. People probably figured that out.
And wait a minute. Like, what?
I know.
Oh, like, you know what? I got to go.
Stop this podcast right now.
I got to go. I'm really sorry. Thanks for coming on.
and people all the time, you know, like nudge me and are like, hey, like, you know, like, were they racist to you in, like, into the Midwest or whatever? And I was like, never. Like, Iowa, Ohio, Michigan. Oh, by the way, I spent 6.5 years working in Louisiana, Alabama, Michigan, Missouri, because that's what I was doing before I ran for president. And I never got a whiff of that stuff when I was traveling the country, because, you know, you show up and people are generally pretty good face to face, person to person. You know,
right.
you have this experience on the road yourself. The problem is, as soon as you pick up the phone and stare at social media, then all of a sudden it seems like, you know, like, people hate each other and I should hate someone. The media, like, you should hate this other group. Politics also just rewards extremity and inflammation, because at this point, each party's primary argument is hating the other party. You know, if you're a Republican, like, how much stuff do you get about, like, the positive vision of the Republican Party versus, like, look at these other fuckers, you know, they're trying to, you know, like, tear down society. And then the same thing, it's like, if you're a Democrat, how much of it's like, look at all these great ways we can fix things or improve your life, versus the other side is rancid and evil and they're coming to get us. And, you know, I mean, there is something I said in my book talk that I only say sometimes, because, like, my book talks kind of vary. But what is the primary Democratic motivating emotion right now for the electorate? the emotion is fear.
Yeah.
And the reason why right now that you're just not getting that level of energy out of Democrats is that you cannot be afraid over and over again forever. Like at a certain point, you just are like, oh, you get exhausted, you know, like
everyone's exhausted, and hate is, what is it? We know what it is. It's destructive. It ruins life. It ruins humanity, and it ruins hope.
Yeah, so what you need is a different set of political incentives. But we have this duopoly where, and this is like the machine or the gears I was talking about before, where you have these organizations, and if you look at it, it's really messed up, where you'll literally have one organization spending $2 billion on a set of congressional races, and the other side spending $2.2 billion in the same cycle. And then you're like, wait a minute, didn't most of that money just cancel each other out? Like, couldn't you, like, maybe have, like, decided to spend the $4 billion in pretty much any other way under the sun, and, like, it would have been better? But, like, what, like, how did they get the $2 billion each? And this is just in one race. I mean, like, it's more like $8 billion, you know, like depending upon the cycle. But how did you get the $2 billion? By making millions of Americans angry, inflamed, terrified, and the rest of it would be like, hey, give us the money, give us the money, like, you know. And then the other side's also like, hey, give us the money, give us the money. Then you had this clash, and then the money got spent, like, bah. And then it was like, wait a minute, probably canceled each other out. And what was the net result? Like $4 billion of us hating each other. And then you repeat that cycle over and over again, and here we are.
And it's a press campaign for hate. That's all you have moved forward. It's as no positive, there's no empowerment. There's no whatever Tony Robbins or Gary Vee is very good at talking positive, and people are all trying to find their place in this world, this post-pandemic world. So everything configured at the same time to just fuck us.
Yep. Yeah. Those are the machine's incentives. And Dave said something to me. I don't know if you're going to feel this too, Bob. But Dave said, like, he will say, like, crowd energy is different now.
Yep.
My crowds, you know, are nowhere near as big as you know, some of the crowds you and Dave are working with. But the vibe in the events I've had has been really, really positive and uplifting, because you have, like, a fairly like self-selecting group of like forward party enthusiasts and other things. I go, and like, it's like the greatest freaking time ever. There is a lot of pain, a lot of struggle right now, even among people who are coming out to try and find a good time. My colleague's mom works in furniture retail, and she says that people come into the store and are just fucking nasty. like they come in and she's like, it used to be like this. So, you know, that there is an energy right now, and like, I'm personally trying to provide like a different type of energy. The Forward Party hopefully can be that for a lot of people. It is truly a necessary antidote to the politics of today, which are rewarded for pissing us off and depressing us and turning us against each other.
Do you have people, Republicans, that are coming to the Forward Party in equal amounts to Democrats, or is it equal, or does it feel a little bit more of people that didn't even have a party or were libertarian in thought? I mean,
it's pretty equal. Like, some of the stuff I've been invigorated by have been military veterans or law enforcement types who reached out and said, hey, I've needed something like this because that's what the country needs. There's some like real patriots who tend to be somewhat conservative, let's say, mm-hmm. who are not pleased with what's going on in the Republican Party. I talked to a guy yesterday who's like, you know, like a fucking stud, who's like a, you know, four tours of duty in Iraq type. And then he came back and was like, wait a minute, I spent years of my life like defending this country, and now I see it's like eating itself up from within. This is literally what he said. He's like, it's not going to be Al-Qaeda or ISIS that kills us. It's going to be us.
Yeah.
and so he's now trying to do everything you can to improve our politics. I mean, like that. So, and he, you know, loves me and the Forward Party because we're trying to do the same thing. That the group of people that are doing this kind of work, a lot of them are of that ilk, where they're super patriotic and tend to be either Republicans or Libertarians or Independents.
Do you go back to the Declaration of Independence? Do you look at that and go, because it's kind of, you're rebooting. You're not reworking. You're not rewriting. Do you look at that document? Have you done that through this course? Because this was you woke up one morning and I'm a really bad interviewer. You woke up one morning and just went, aha, I Forward Party. That's what I want to do.
Well, I certainly don't. Like, that's not the process at all.
Wasn't like, boing, I have an idea, honey.
You know, and that's one thing that irritated the shit out of me, Bob. It's like, you know, I launched the Forward Party and have this book, and then people are like, oh, like Yang just like started his own third party because he, you know, frankly, you know, just like felt like it was the thing to do. And I was like, well, you do realize it takes about a year to write a book. So it's not like I could have like woken up and been like, let's do this. And here's this book I just like, you know, like shat out of my ass. That's not like the way, you know, what happened to me was that I came off the presidential trail and tried to figure out the answer to that woman's question from the stage, which I don't use her in the book, but like, why do we feel so shitty about the trajectory of the country? Like, why do we feel so unsettled? Why are we so pessimistic? And then what can we do about it? That's like the fundamental two questions. And when I started digging into why things aren't working, I realized, oh, the duopoly's not set up to work. The duopoly is set up to turn us against each other. And then you thought, okay, like, how the hell do you fix that? And to your point about trying to rework something or reboot something, there were no Democrats or Republicans when the country got started. There are no Democrats or Republicans in the Constitution. Like, we made this shit up later. Like, yeah. The Republicans were formed as a Northern anti-slave party during the Civil War era. And so, you know, that's like a pretty good stretch of time of, you know, 80 years or so before they come on the scene. So you have this 160-year-old duopoly that's totally fabricated. And it, by the way, it makes no sense. It's like terrible, terrible design. You would never set it up where you just had two parties this way. Jonathan Haidt said the worst number of parties you can have is one, and the second worst is two. And he's right. You know what would be the third worst? Having three. I mean, three, but I got to say, the value difference between having two parties and having three parties would be enormous. Like, if you could get to three, like, you'd have a chance. So when I was digging into this, Bob, I was like, oh my God, like, the reason I feel like we're sunk is because we have this dysfunctional duopoly that is not, it's not designed to actually come together and solve problems. It's designed to divide us. And then when you're in the face of that, you say, okay, like, what's a way out? And the way out is to shift to nonpartisan open primaries and have new parties emerge. So you obviously start with like a third party, though. I'll say too, I mean, it's one reason why libertarians are excited about this is because libertarians have been trying to make a similar case for years and been completely shut out. They're like, look, I might not agree with Yang on everything, but I can, you know, I can make common cause with this. Like, if we can try and shake the system up. So imagine coming to this conviction and being Andrew Yang, you know, late last year, or early this year, and say, okay, the problem is going to kill us. Here's a solution. By the way, the solution is going to strike a lot of people as very difficult / impossible. But I am one of, I don't know, 5, 10, 20, 100 like Americans who might be able to make this case and do it. So if you were me, then you're like, okay, it's time to pony up and do this thing and make this case to my country. In part because I've had so many people get behind me over the course of the last several years that I do feel this responsibility to try and make the most out of my time here. And, you know, you're a parent, I'm a parent. You know, what are we going to do? Just leave them a shit show and be like, well, you know, like, couldn't do anything about it. Like, you know,
and that's why Gen Z is angry. They're holding us responsible. And Right? To some degree, they're right, and to some degree, they're not, because we had no control over what happened. It was two giant monoliths that just rolled into this shit show that they are experiencing.
And Bob, you know, I apologize to young people all the time when I say, I'm sorry we left you such a fiasco. And then I say, I personally had nothing to do with it. You know, I'm Asian. I just got here. No. but that is the situation we're in. It's like, okay. And one thing I'm just going to throw out there, too, when you talk about, you know, different generations having different levels of responsibility. Everyone knows that at this point, America is a gerontocracy. The combined ages of our likely presidential candidates in 2024 will be 158. You know, like, out of this corner, out of Scranton, PA, 81 years young, Joe Biden, out right. of that corner with his crazy old man energy.
Right.
You know, Donald here's Trump, 77.
Here's a pumpkin on a stick versus a zucchini.
And a lot of Americans are going to look up being like, these are our fucking choices. This is like not, you know, like, how does this make sense? And I am going to suggest to something that you said earlier that I do think if those are choices, or if it's Kamala, who's obviously not as old, but I'm going to suggest that there are going to be a lot of Americans who are still unhappy with this set of choices. I think there will be a lot of energy around some alternative. Mm-hmm. Ross Perot got 19.3% in 92, frankly, kind of steadier time. An independent candidate I know polled himself in 2020 just to see how he'd do, and he had himself at 25%, which strikes me as pretty reasonable and realistic. I think that a credible independent presidential candidate is walking around with 20 to 25% on day one and could go higher still pretty easily if people are excited. The single biggest obstacle that candidate would have would be, can they win? If people had a sense that person could win, I think you get to 30, 35% easily, because right now independents are 44% of the country, 62% want to move on from the duopoly. So I think you'd have a chance to make history.
Well, obviously you have that in mind. You're not going, you didn't create the Forward Party to not do this. And you're not doing a constant press tour, which is you're talking about it as much as you can to get yourself embedded with what you believe in your heart. So I guess your plan would be the dream candidate, what we've all wanted, is someone that looks into the camera when you get the president's address and you actually, we know the address, it's the White House, but to look into the camera and tell people in human speak, because we don't get that. We get people just ranting and saying how great they did, and even if they didn't, or trying to change optics, and you would be getting all of that in going toward that. But I mean, we're dying for that. I believe most of the country is. I'd like to think that.
I think a lot of the country is looking for some kind of antidote or alternative. And I do think I broke through in part because people saw me as a human being. You know, one thing, Bob, that I just thought about, and this is only, you know, half joking, is that when you talk about someone addressing the country from the White House to be like, you know, here's real talk. I thought of the scenes from one of those asteroid movies like Deep Impact or, you know, Armageddon, where the person's like, you know, hey, you know, the asteroid's coming. And then I thought of like having Dave Chappelle in the White House, where we bring him in and be like, hey, Dave, I want you to deliver this message to the American people. Having been to the belly of the beast, Bob, it is interesting, though. It's like you now see the media construction and how hand-in-hand like the political parties are with various media networks. And you also see that the younger generation is not getting their information the same way. The average cable news viewer is 64, maybe. And you know, the average Gen Z or millennial is getting their information from social media or podcasts, or TikTok at this point. We gotta like invest in, you know, more informative TikTok. I mean, TikTok's fine. I don't know. Are you on TikTok, Bob?
I am. And I've gotten in trouble on there just by existing.
Yeah. I'm going to tell a funny story that's like, I don't know if it's funny. Who the hell knows? My team at one point thought it would be funny for me to do some kind of, pop-ins or whatever. And like, we thought people would be, you know, like, they had to see me, but then there'd be like, you know, a bunch of young people who didn't give a shit about politics and the rest of it. And I was like, all right, this isn't working so well. That was like, just like a real education and like made me feel my age a bit.
Right.
So the appetite in 24, I think, will be real. And I think they're going to be, it's going to be a group of people that come together to try and make that case. I hope the Forward Party is a part of it.
You've learned a lot, and you're standing, and you're really the fact that you're lucid and go, yeah, I'm going to do this. I find that really interesting, because there's a lot of people always perceive with me in my life what kindness or sincerity is a weakness, and I know that you're not that way, and if you're a smart, sane person, lucky enough to have those things, it's a strength. So how can you impart that to people that are so closed in order to get your message across? Because you're so nice. You come off so nice. I know you're not faking it. So how can people really respond right now to the pit bull in the junkyard, you know, dog? How do you combat that wackiness, which is what you went through in the presidential election?
It's funny, Bob. One of the things I learned during the campaigns was the more true to yourself you can be, the better you're going to do. And when I was trying to simulate a presidential candidate, it wasn't going that well. And the more I was myself, the more we were able to generate energy and attention. I think that, you know, that we have to be positive versions of ourselves in a time when I think people really need it. And I'm a human being, you know, like I have failings and faults and temper flare-ups and everything else. But the fact that there are so many people that look at me, the fact that there are people that look at me and say like, hey, like I think Yang is working on something good. It's an awesome privilege. It's something that when I was younger, I never could have imagined, you know, like, imagine you're a no-name dude who runs for president. And then 2 years later, there are thousands of people at rallies chanting your name and chanting your name because they believe that you're trying to help them get to a better future. And then you're the same person, you know, another year and a half later, you still feel fired up to try and help those people. I mean, I was in Iowa last month for the book tour, and this waitress came up to me who'd taken time off from her job, like a shift off, and then bought my book and like came and showed up. And I could tell it was like, you know, a significant decision on her part. But she said, thank you so much for trying to fight for like the little person in me. I always felt like the only two that cared about me were you or Bernie. And hearing that, you're just like, oh my God, this like waitress in Iowa actually like believed in me to the point where she's willing to take a shift off by this book and like come here. And I'm not going to have that face-to-face experience with a lot of people that do like me or believe in me. Or I'm going to say what most people are doing is they're just living their lives because they, you know, they have lives to live and they're not like keeping track of Andrew Yang's like every, you know, like coming and going. But if we get to a point where we're fighting for something that becomes relevant or exciting to them, like, you know, they'll get activated at that point. So these are the things that I think about, you know, just wake up and have this job. It's a bizarre job, but it's a job of incredible privilege, really. And so, yeah, I just want to make the most of it. It's a little bit different for me than it is for folks who are just, you know, like making people feel good in terms of comedy and entertainment. But I will say there are a lot of parallels, and you all have a tough job. Like, you know, I talk to Dave about it sometimes. I talk to different comedians about it. It's, right. It's like making a living by making people laugh is like an extraordinarily tough job. I think I've got like a parallel type of pursuit where it's not an easy job. I'm not going to pretend that it is, but it's something that there's so many people out there that would kill for, you know, like a job like you and I have.
Well, I look at it the same as you do, but I look at yours as a much more important scale in success and in not in success. Just the attempt alone and who you are as a person is something that is going to be, is already embedded. It's already part of history, and this will become part of history if you became the president, which would be really so much fun to watch. But
you know, that was one of the things that gave me hope too, Bob. I was like, come on, America. Wouldn't Yang in the White House be a good time? Like, wouldn't there just be like good times? You know, it would be funny. It'd be human. You'd have people you like and enjoy walking around. Like, it wouldn't be this officious bullshit, which, by the way, like, half of that shit's not working. I mean, at least half. I mean, you saw what happened to Afghanistan. There are a lot of really, like, buttoned up people, like, pretending shit was going well. They executed the withdrawal poorly.
I did that once, but I would have had a fourth kid.
Joe was then put in position where he had a couple of choices. One thing would be what he did, which is to say, hey, we made the decision that everyone wanted us to make and everything was according to plan. Not true, as would come out later, but whatever. And then number two would be some version of like, hey, the intent was good, but we botched the plan, we fucked up. Now, in America today, because of the polarization we're talking about, any admission of failure would end up giving rise to this whole new, like, you know, flurry of press stories, and that like the press would be a bit like piranha trying to have a feeding frenzy, and you like throw a nice piece of meat in the river and then they just go crazy. It drives like another 1-2 negative news cycles if you throw the red meat in the river. So Joe then had to be on line number one being like, hey, everything was exactly as we'd planned, even though, by the way, a number of weeks later people would be like, yeah, that's not the case. And common sense, we all could tell, it's like, there's no way this was the plan. like this
right.
Is like, so he was subject to the same media incentives that we're seeing. I've been in the same boat where I've been standing there and like someone has a mic in your face and then you're making a calculation. You're like, okay, if I act like a human being here and I admit what's really going on, like it's going to drive another 1 to 2 days of negative coverage. And so that's the funhouse mirror world we live in today, Bob. You know, it's like you're not allowed to say what everyone knows because your incentives are driving you the other direction. I mean, the internal document showed that they did not think things were going to unravel that quick. It's like when they were being asked about evacuating people, you know, internally they'd be like, oh, we've got, I think the number was 6 months. And then they did not have 6 months. So one of the more honest depictions would have been to come out and say, okay, guys, we just miscalculated like how long this stuff is going to have. Like, I think that was like the honest truth, is that like thought we had 6 months, turns out we had, you know, 3 weeks. That's my sense of what happened, was that they thought they had months and they had days or weeks. And so then if you went to the American people and be like, hey, you know, our planners just pretty much botched this one by a factor of 10. is that a message that's going to hit home? Which, by the way, I think was what happened in real life.
Right. Now, how you're so, look, you're a nice person. You're a smart man. there are people that want a guy, a woman, however someone identifies, they're a fierce motherfucker. That's what people want. Some people, you know, the Trump supporters want someone that will just say, F them, drop a bomb. Let's just do this. How, and I know you get asked this, and I'm not the guy to ask the question, but I am curious, how does such a nice person put on the badass boots? And when it comes to someone coming into your office, your president, and say, we've got this country we didn't expect, or Russia, or someone, China's wanting to kill us. What's that side of Andrew Yang? You get asked that a lot.
I have been asked this. Yeah, it's like I would do whatever the country requires. You know, and I have friends who are in armed forces who I appreciate their service a great deal, and I would never put them into harm's way lightly. But if they had an opportunity to do something that would help the country, that involved risking their lives, they would do it. I mean, that's what they signed up to do, and that's this soul deep motivation. And if that required me inflicting harm upon people in other parts of the world that wish us harm, I mean, that's something that I'm very comfortable doing. You know, you would never do something like run for president if you didn't have that in you. Maybe you would. Maybe there's some pacifist out there. But like Andrew Yang's not much of a pacifist. I think people think of me as very, you know, calm or upbeat or whatnot. But like I'm a guy who, you know, got in a lot of fights as a kid.
Yeah, you did. I love, yeah. People need to do a deep dive on what you looked like and what kind of a kid you were. It's really fascinating. I mean, that's like a journey. But you were like a hard ass teen, right?
So I was a very, very nerdy Asian kid, and then I was a very, very angry teen, and I would hit the gym and train in martial arts because I was so pissed off, and I'd get into fights periodically, I was like that through my, I was like a freaking angry gym-going dude for like over a decade, easy. I started mellowing out when I met Evelyn, if you want to look up photos, it's like photos, Andrew Yang, like Tina, whatever, it is fun. I mean, I kind of miss that guy. But I referenced this in the book somewhat. It's like I had to be pretty angry to run for president. You know, like it was like an act of anger in some ways, even though I don't come across as very angry all the time. But you've got to be kind of pissed off if you decide to do it.
And people don't understand that, and I'm like that. I'll laugh like you're laughing, and that's because things are so dismal. And rather than rant and be angry, because that's all we're getting. All we're getting is people yelling at us. The news clips that you see from whichever party, whichever representative, they're just screaming at us all day long. I can't take the yelling, so... You might have the anger there, but you have this wonderful thing where you laugh, which people don't get. That's your anger. That's how you're diffusing it, by not yelling at the lens, I think. Is that an accurate assessment, and is that a good therapist appointment?
I mean, shit, dude. I used to talk about how my two goals were to accelerate the end of poverty and stay married. You kind of put a positive sheen on things in part so that the woman in your life doesn't ditch you. I'm deeply concerned about the way things are going, and I feel them deeply too. I mean, I feel the pain and the suffering. I was the guy just talking about how AI is going to automate away a lot of the jobs, which, by the way, it is. It's a very dark topic. But I presented it, I think, in a way that made people think, it's like maybe we can do something about it. It's the same thing. It's like democracy is disintegrating, by the way. Our country is careening towards Civil War 2.0. And maybe we can do something about it. I'm very much the do something about it guy. And that there is, that we just need that confidence, that energy, that faith, that optimism. We need to believe in each other a bit more. Believe in Bob Saget. Bob Saget's a good man, and he'll make you laugh and make you think. You know,
it's a very kind soundbite, but I would say believe in Andrew Yang, because unless you want to change your name to Bob Saget, which I would allow.
Body swap, name swap. Oh, dude, what we should do is like have you, you know, book this comedy tour and then just total no explanation. I just show up.
Yeah, it's
I'm like, hey, everyone, thanks for coming.
It won't take long to fill you in with what I'm going to say.
And then it'd be like, okay, so Yang is opening for Bob Saget. And then like,
no.
and then And then over time they dawn and being like, I don't think this is the opener. He's going on for too long. or maybe I introduce myself as Bob Saget, and then that would just be purely bizarre. But there is a very, very important role, I think, that comedians play, man. It's like in an era of untruth, like comedians are some of the last truth tellers. So people, and you can see this too with a commingling in the media, where you have first Jon Stewart with The Daily Show, but now you'd say Bill Maher, Trevor Noah, John Oliver, Greg Gutfeld. Like there are people who are these like comedic takes.
Colbert, Jimmy Kimmel, Seth Meyers.
Yeah, for sure.
Everybody, I mean, has nighttime comedy has become politics for people that even, you know, Jimmy Fallon and James Corden, they're not cut from that cloth to make political humor, but it's part of our culture. I don't always, sometimes I relax at night getting the political jokes from people that I know that I respect, the nighttime people, or from Bill or from, you know, John Oliver. And other times it upsets me even more. Because it's just truth. Trevor Noah is just speaking his truth. You know, there's punchlines, but it's become people on the pulpit, a lot of comedians.
Yeah, they're some of the most trusted figures in American life, in my opinion. And I'm with you, too. Like, I don't consume it all because, you know, it sometimes does make me a little bit sad.
Yeah.
But it's the way most Americans get their news, in my opinion.
And what do we do about the news? Do we have FCC rulings? I mean, I have to bring something up which affected me very deeply. We had a couple of things happen. One thing was this year's tribute to 9/11. So they're running the footage. There used to be, and if I believe, until this year, on every channel, some of these images may be disturbing. This year, when I'm watching all of the, I switch from all of the, when I watch news, I watch everybody. I will get a sound bite from all. And they show people jumping out of the towers. And this is at 1 p.m, when a 6-7-year-old can walk into the room. And it doesn't tell anybody who could use some parental guidance, a parent that should be told, don't let a kid see this. There is no more disclaimer. What have we become? It's just violence is just okay to show this horrific. I mean, it's the horrors of humanity, what you see in that footage, and there's no stopping it now. It's like anything can run any time. Would you try to police that a little more? I mean, it's affecting children, I think.
Yeah, I think we do need some broadcast standards that have more consistency and force. I'm going to go a step further too, where I don't know if you've seen the recent research about social media use in kids. I mean, that's really, really damaging their mental health.
Young girls and Instagram and what it's done over the past decade.
Yeah. So I think we should be chasing down all of these things. And that's something that some people who have a libertarian bent are like, no, it's like, you know, like government bad. It's like, look, you know, families have to be able to turn on the TV and not have their kids be subject to either the images you're talking about or one of the things that's a gripe of mine. I was very affected by horror movies when I was, you know, like 6 or 7. Saw American Werewolf in London. It gave me nightmares for a week, that kind of thing. I see some TV advertising for either TV shows or horror movies that I'm like, they can just fucking show that shit on the channels like that, like, you know, images that are jump scare type stuff that I think would be like disturbing for, you know, a 5 or 6 year old. And like, by the way, I have a 6 year old in the house. So I think that there are standards that we've let erode and just like, look, let's just like make it so that you can have the TV on and not worry about it. Unless maybe certain channels, you could be like, look, if you're going to be on channel X, then then stuff can get a little racier and more aggressive. But it shouldn't be the network news. I agree with you. We should bring back, this is going to be controversial to some people, but like cable news ended up splintering our political mind in different ways. And by the way, it wasn't like this before the 90s. You had something called the Fairness Doctrine. This is why, so if you watch these old-timey TV shows, and then there are like these calm people and tweed jackets and whatnot, and there's like one person discussing one side and the other person discussing the other side. There was actually a rule called the Fairness Doctrine that said, look, if you're going to present something and it's of great significance, then you need to present multiple sides. And it wasn't like a 50-50 split. It wasn't super strictly enforced, but it's just like a norm. It's like, look, if you're going to present something, just try to present the whole picture. They got rid of that rule in the 80s, and then cable news came about. Most of what they're presenting as news isn't even news, it's just like opinion. So you should probably have a rule about that, being like, look, if you're going to call yourself news, then like here are some rules to abide by, which you can't just be, you know, like presenting one side. And we should bring back the Fairness Doctrine so that someone would have to be like, and here's like the other point of view, just to try and bounce it out somewhat. Like, who really loses in that situation? You know, if you have like a more sanity in cable news on certain networks, it's like, is that really negative in some way? And the norm used to kind of be there where you could see the cable news networks were like trying to seem like objective, but now that shit went out the window. Now it's like, well, we're just going to give the people what they want. And because of the way they operate, it's like the people and what they want is very specific because they built that audience in a certain direction.
Well, they're also saying now they want to call it different news, whether it be opinion or whether it be news. Now, who's going to decide that? You know,
not only that, but people are just going to watch the opinion and just, you know, like inhale it. So one of the suggestions I have in the book is around long form conversations like this one, because there's a cadence to cable news segments that abbreviates any real thought or real discussion.
Right.
And if you have two humans sitting down and having a conversation for, let's say, 20, 25 minutes, that's more akin to how it happens in real life. Like, sometimes you'll sit down with someone and have a conversation like that. You know what you never do in real life? Have someone pepper you with questions, and then chirons, and then this, and then, you know, like, and if you talk for more than a certain length of time, they'll cut you off.
Right.
And then the thing ends, and finally they say, thank you. And then now, the next person on the assembly line is like, whoosh, like, here's another, like, literally, like, I've obviously done this job.
Yeah.
And so you are literally a talking head. It's like, here's the talking head, and then we're just going to, like, you know, like bring in the next segment, and then someone will congratulate you being like, nice hit, nice hit.
It's so crazy. Yeah. You have 1 minute to make your point. Oh, I'm sorry, we don't have audio. Can you unhit the mute button and your segment's over?
Yeah, I mean, I say this in the book, too, where I, like, go to my team, I was like, why am I doing these cable news hits? Like, we don't get any like clicks or money from them. It's like, not like anyone. That's another thing too. It's like, when I did podcasts, people would actually look up andrewyang.com and like make a donation and do things like that. Like, that shit never happened after I was on cable news, because it's just like a different relationship. It's like, no one's watching cable news and then immediately, like, you know, will turn around and make a donation to someone. I questioned my team. I was like, why are we doing these things? And they're like, oh, you need to do them because cable news drives coverage, drives legitimacy, and, like, you know, right. you need every bit you can get.
I believe that. I read that in your book, and I do believe it's that old Marshall McLuhan thing, the medium is the message. And if people see you on CNN, on Fox, you've said that you had good experiences on Fox in the book. And you also had not such a great experience with MSNBC.
that is accurate. I was on Fox just last week. You know, had a good experience then too. I mean, it's funny now too, because I'm a former Democrat turned independent, and so the Fox crew kind of enjoys having me on. Whereas MSNBC, I will say, you can look this up. They haven't had me on at all since I left the Democratic Party. I guess I'll just leave it there.
But then you could, if you wanted to go on, I'm sure, put yourself out there. I know you had a good experience with Chris Hayes, from what I was reading.
Chris Hayes is a good dude. And
yes, he is.
You know, and I haven't been pushing it, Bob. There are certain MSNBC anchors I think I have a good relationship with, but it's not like I've been calling them up being like, hey, help me on. Like, you know,
yeah, right. I'm really sweaty. Please put me on.
But I think one thing I will say did happen is that I had an MSNBC appearance scheduled, and then the book came out. And if you read the book is kind of mean to MSNBC. And then my MSNBC appearance got canceled. And I think it was probably because someone read the book and was like, hey, FYI, like Yang trashes us in this book.
Well, I could understand that, but I would also think as your stock rises and as this continues to be a giant boulder that accumulates more, you know, dirt and moss as these campaigns do, that they would, you'd be on. I mean, everybody will want to have you on because you're, you know, a third party used to just mean you're going to try to spice your marriage up. I think this is, you can use that. I'm sure you're going to make that the front.
It took me 1 second too long to get that joke.
Right. Honey, I just want to bring a third party into our relationship. And it's forward party, not to worry.
Oh, yeah. Look at that. Bring the forward party into your marriage. I got, like, unfortunately, this marriage isn't working. Like, you know, the duopoly marriage is not working. So are they even married anymore?
That's like, no, this country is separated. I mean, this country is not divorced. And I don't want to see it get divorced because the kids suffer sometimes.
A divorce in this country would be fucking ugly. I mean, and that's where we're heading.
Yeah, it is. But on a lighter note, I know that you have a lot of opinions about NFTs. I have not done one sidebar, but you're very... I just got to pick your brain because I'm still confused completely. And Bitcoin, are you a subscriber? I'm just taking you off topic just to give you a moment of relief.
Not at all. So there is immense and enormous potential to the blockchain and some of the technology that are underlying cryptocurrencies. Ethereum has some properties that, if applied in certain ways, could be positively utopian. Think about smart money. Think about people being able to vote from your mobile phone and knowing that it's secure and tamper-proof. Organizations that can make decisions based upon genuine collective will, because you just like submit it to the group and then everyone goes beep boop and then it's like, all right, I guess this is the way we're heading. Like these things are conceivably possible because of crypto. Not even conceivably. I mean, some of this shit's real now. Are there certain things that are just being hyped? Like is there extra froth in the market? I believe that there is, yes. And so like if someone were to enter that zone, it should not be money that, you know, you're relying on.
Right. Like, everyone always says, use money that you don't care about. And I don't know, most people care about their money. So it's gambling for people.
Yeah, but generally I am a proponent of the potential of some of these technologies long term. And I do think that our government needs a responsible, balanced approach to the industry. And that's not where their natural inclination will be. Their natural inclination will be to spike it and to kill it. And I don't think that's the right approach. So that's my take on it, Bob. It's definitely like, you know, not for someone who... you would want to use money that you're not going to miss. But there is great potential there. I do think that, you know, these things do tend to go in cycles and that there are going to be some like booms and busts on the way.
But it's not a Ponzi scheme. We're talking about an actual alternative that uses a lot of computer drive.
Well, so Bob, and this is the other thing that's tough. Some of these things have very, very valuable underlying technologies and some of them don't. So that's the other tricky part is like some of it you look up and you're like, wait, what is this thing? And then you can be confused. And by the way, your confusion is justified.
Right.
So that's the other tough part of the space is that some of it you look at it and you're like, I'm not sure what the substance is. And another thing, like, oh, I can see how that could be really powerful.
I want to let you go do it. What do you do now? Do you go eat lunch? Do you have a power lunch? Do you eat granola? Do you have a smoothie? Do you go hug a kid?
I go in my stasis chamber that, you know, like, you know, like kind of both defrosts me and recharges me.
So you're a Marvel. You're a Marvel character. It is accurate.
That's the other Asian guy. No, I'm kidding. I mean, I'm trying to build a movement. So conversations like this one are super helpful. Mm-hmm. I meet people that are interested in helping move the ball forward. In some way, I'm talking to political leaders of different kinds. I just endorsed a candidate yesterday.
I saw.
Who's a Republican. He's a sane Republican, really. He's like, I liked him. He's one of the 13 who supported the infrastructure bill.
Go ahead. Sorry. I was going to.
By the way, it was historically bipartisan. I don't see how they managed to politicize this one because our country is literally falling apart. So he's like one of the rare breed of 13 Republicans in Congress who voted for it. And then, oh, by the way, now Trump is attacking him and Trump's endorsing his opponent. So, you know, it's like, to me, it's like, you got to try and reward someone for doing the right thing. And I'd spoken to this particular Congressman, David McKinley, during the pandemic when I was lobbying for cash relief checks for everyone. Mm-hmm. So if you like those, Congressman McKinley was our Republican co-sponsor of that bill. And so as a result, like, I think he's a good man, a patriot. And so I'm trying to help him stay in office. So, you know, I do things like that on the regular each day. I am also working on trying to provide an alternative source of news that people can believe in, because I think that the media is broken. I have a podcast, if people are into that. We're movement building. It's a lot of fun.
What do you do? How do you explain? How can we stop people that we're watching on the news on some of these not fringe, unfortunately, news factions that will literally tell you you're looking at a chair and they'll tell you it's a glass of water. You are literally being lied to your face, and they're taking a fact and there is no fact. And it's just, they're lying. I mean, it's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It's like a comedy character. It's like, oh no, that's not true. I wasn't there. And then there's footage of the person there. I mean, how do we deal with this? We've never had lying to this degree be tolerated.
Yeah, it's very dystopian. It's very dark. And by the way, technology is about to compound the problem, because we are going to have synthetic videos and deepfakes where legitimately I could be like, I never had that conversation with Bob.
Right.
One of my friends who runs one of the big tech companies said, look, the tech companies, government, the media, and nonprofits have to come together and set some guidelines and rules for the road, and essentially have a way to verify what is factual, what is real, and what is not, or else we're going to descend into chaos in terms of information. And we're already there. I know some of the mainstream news sources you're talking about that are presenting lies as fact. I think that there does need to be a consortium of groups that includes the government, includes the media companies, includes the tech companies, to say, look, like, you know, if we stray beyond the boundaries of what's real, like, there needs to be some kind of check or accountability. Because right now, your financial incentives are around pushing the envelope as far as you can go, and then go beyond it.
I mean, it's very, very glum, because people can just deny. Is that even fixable?
There are some countermeasures you could take, but we would need to get our acts together very, very quickly. The countermeasure that I think is the most legit that we could pursue is that every device can have a digital watermark that confirms that, let's say I take a smartphone video, and then people are like, hey, that's bullshit, like, I didn't do that. That you can have a digital watermark that ties it to that device and says, this is an original video taken on this device and has been unaltered. There is a technology that we could try to put on every network TV camera, every smartphone, and then make it so that if you ever question the veracity of something, you could actually be able to document it. But even that's not a total fix. When you look at AI, the countermeasures to some of the synthetic videos that Nina's talking about and that we're talking about essentially enable you to put a confidence interval on whether something's real, where you could be like, hey, there's like a, like, we can't say 100% that this thing's real, but like 94% it's real or something like that. That is actually the best version of reality we can hope for in the future, is being able to place confidence intervals on whether something's real or fake. Good times ahead. So that's what the technology picture looks like. The digital watermark is helpful, though. If we can get that, so at least then some sources of truth and like network sent a camera, filmed this, like, and that's what happened. Like, at least that we could hopefully rely on.
And this book really affected me, and I want people to read it, and I'll be promoting it more when you say goodbye, because that's always better. Much of this book has been about systemic problems and structural fixes. Yet the most important thing we can do to improve our future is the most personal, to extend a sense of grace and tolerance toward the people who disagree with us or who are different from us in some way, even those who attack us. This sense of forgiveness starts with each of us. We're only human. The goal should not be to tear each other down, but to make each other whole. It starts with forgiving ourselves. Now, that's the speak of someone who wants to be a president. If that's the speak of someone that wants to be a president, that is the right speak. That's what we've been yearning for, to hear something inclusive. People say it, but no one's executing it.
Yeah, I try to live it, Bob, but it's not easy. You know, like, you are a human being. But it's what the country needs right now. And I think it's what people are searching for. They just don't know it. That there has to be a true movement that heals us. And it's going to be hard because, like you've been suggesting, anger sells better than healing. Hopefully we can make the case that that there's a silent majority of us that wants better than what we're being fed by both our political system and their media partners, truly, I mean, to put it bluntly. And I'm building that movement, and I hope that people will join.
Well, you totally feel organically to me to be the right person for that, because it's not going to be exhausting. And what people can't take is, okay, so now we have to take it all in again, and now we have to go to school again on how to treat each other. But your attitude is just in behavioral and in your rhetoric. It's not like, these are the rules for engagement with our country. That's not what you're doing.
Part of the message, Bob, is that we just need to enjoy ourselves again and appreciate our friends and family. Just look out. This is something I have lived, where it's, you know, I've got some days that are tougher than others, but then you look outside or you see a random stranger on the street. They don't give a shit about what the hell, like, you know, like is going on with me at that moment. And, you know, like, the sun is shining, the birds are chirping. That's the energy of what we're trying to build, really, is like grace and forgiveness and forgiving ourselves. Is just like, look, you know, there are some things that are awesome about life and we should embrace them, and we should not hate each other. There is absolutely no reason to hate another human being. And if you do hate, you know who loses? You do. like it's not hurting them, really. It's just hurting you. The antidote to a lot of this is humor. It's like levity, it's joy, it's compassion, it's love.
It's love. Love's become passé. People are cynical to the word love.
Yeah, and yet you do sometimes glimpse love. You know, it's like, so when I was with Dave the other night, there's a lot of love in that room, which is a very big room. It was Madison Square Garden. Like, there's still pockets of it. And we need much, much more of it. We need healing movement of love, really. And what's funny is, like, I'm like an odd choice for that. But it's what I want to try to provide, is like a haven where people don't have to feel shitty about other people or, you know, the country. We can feel good about ourselves.
Yeah, and love our country, because I love our country. So
me too. This country's the bomb. Just remember, there are billions of people around the world that are still trying to get here. You know what I mean? Like, my family immigrated here, and we've had incredible opportunities as a result. Like, that's what we want to pass to our kids, that sense of America, American possibility. I've lived it. I mean, shit. Like, I'm like this scruffy child of immigrants who ran for president, and people actually got behind me. Now I get to hang out with Bob Saget and hopefully do some great stuff. That's America for you.
That is America. And I must tell you, Andrew, I really look forward to meeting you in person and hanging out, maybe with Dave. Maybe that would be so much fun. So
that's a date. This vision will come to pass. It's going to be me, Bob, and Dave. Maybe in Yellow Spring, Ohio, maybe someplace else. We'll see.
I'll go wherever. And I just thank you so much for being a guest, but for talking to me. It really, really felt good. And I really do love your book. And I just wish you just a lot of good health and safety out there. And I look forward to watching what's going to happen with you. And I mean, this could be very fun. I mean, this forward party just feels nice. I don't know who coined that, but somebody should get some change out of that. That's really...
as long as America gets some change out of it. But thank you. Forward party, may it be good vibes. Good vibes for all.
Yeah. Well, thank you. My best to you and your family. And I'll see you. Thank you so much, Andrew.
See you soon, Bob. USA. Have a great time on the road, man. Travel safe.
Thank you. Maybe I'll be in the same city and I'll find you.
Do that.
I will. Be well. Thanks so much, Andrew. Andrew Yang. I think it's the first. Andrew is the first person running for an office, which would be the president of the United States, with his forward party, that I've ever had on the podcast. But I just felt like I knew him already, and I think that's what's so interesting, his intellect and his kindness. And I really appreciate him coming on here. I really recommend this book. What's interesting is when you see a book and you go, oh, I can't read that. That's so much intel. Forward Notes on the Future of Our Democracy. It's got the American flag all neon lit. It's in dialogue that I need, as I'm not very smart. You heard me try to read the first quote from his book. I'll never get over it. But he is he's a plain speaker. He's got a pure heart. So that's it. People will probably critique this if they want to and go, oh, Bob's endorsement. I endorse Andrew Yang as a human being, and I just I'm very fascinated and very interested in watching and living through his journey. He's a sweetheart. So thank you, Andrew Yang, for being on this podcast, and you'll be seeing him and hearing him on every podcast, including his own. So you're going to want to be listening to that. And I recommend that book very, very highly. Also, you know what to do with this podcast. You just fold it up and put it in your pants. No, I'm trying to clean that up. You just, you know, you get it where you get your podcast. It's on Apple, Spotify, Twitcher, Clatcher, Blinson. It's almost Christmas, isn't it? And you can watch it on the YouTube page, youtube.com/Bob Saget. And that'd be me. And you can also, you know, you hear it everywhere. Download it, rate, review, subscribe. All that stuff that everybody tells you on every single podcast, wherever your podcasts are available. I didn't mention the 1-800-CARS-FOR-KIDS commercial to him because I think that's the first thing that he should address if he becomes president, is get rid of that commercial. I wish you all a really a happy holiday time. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving. If you're listening to this from outside of the U.S. and you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, or you're within the U.S. and are having difficulty with accepting Thanksgiving because the world is upside down, I just love stuffing, and I love family. And I love stuffing my family with stuffing. And anyway, I'm just saying happy holidays. And we've got some great episodes coming up in the weeks ahead. And I'll be calling you guys very shortly. So take a look on my Twitter and Instagram stories. And I'll be telling you what number to call and leave a message. And I'll be calling you on a certain time and a certain day very, very soon. Wishing you well and your families and lots of good health. Please take care of yourselves. And I'm sending love. There it is. I'm sending you guys love. Damn it, I said it. A word that will work again. If it doesn't work right now, I think try to put some in your life today. Maybe try to love yourself a little bit. You know, not too much. You know, don't lay back in the lazy boy. All right, enough of that. Bye, everybody.